Welcome all of you to today's candidates forum for the office of Chicago's mayor, covering issues of importance to our disability community. Today we have over 300 people attending, whether you're here in person or those of you who are watching online virtually. And I want to welcome all of you for being here today. A little bit about Access Living. We're a nonprofit, non-residential, independent living center that's run and led by disabled people. We support our disabilities community by providing critical independent living services, educating on disability issues, and leading policy initiatives that will make our city, state, and nation more just, inclusive, and accessible. With over 61 million disabled people across the United States, we represent one of the most diverse and fastest-growing segments of the population. I'd like to welcome and thank the candidates who have taken the time to be with us here today and to share how they will or are addressing or plan to address key issues of importance to Chicagoans with disabilities and their families. The mayor of our city undoubtedly has a tremendous impact on many aspects of our life and the livability of our city as disabled people. So having you all here talking about these issues that matter to us will help inform our community as we prepare to vote in the Chicago municipal election on February 28th. The questions that will be asked of these seven candidates will come directly from the disability community and touch on some of the most pressing issues and barriers we face. Please know that Access Living's website has more extensive written responses from the candidates on a disability issues questionnaire, which was a prerequisite for participating in today's forum. So be sure to check that out at accessliving.org. You can also find there the candidates' campaign websites, and soon you can also find a recording of today's forum. So before we get started, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors and partners for their support of today's forum and for elevating disability issues in their own work. Our sponsors in alphabetical order are Active Transportation Alliance, AIDS Foundation of Chicago, Disability Lead, Equip for Equality, the Illinois Network for Centers for Independent Living, and the Statewide Independent Living Council of Illinois. Our partnering organizations are the Arc of Illinois, Better Streets Chicago, the Chicago Area Fair Housing Alliance, the League of Women Voters, Legal Action Chicago, and the Legal Council for Health Justice. Finally, I'd like to take a moment to thank the many Access Living staff who've worked tirelessly over the past several months to put today's forum on. With that, I'd like to now introduce our moderator, who is behind me, Andres Gallegos. Andres is a former board chair of Access Living. Andres is a staunch advocate for the rights of disabled people on the local and federal level. He serves as a partner at the law firm of Hughes, Sokol, and Pierce. And in 2020, on Inauguration Day, he was appointed by President Biden to chair the National Council on Disability, an independent federal agency advising the President and Congress on disability issues. Andres, welcome, and thank you for serving as today's moderator. I'll now turn it over to you.
Great, thank you. The most important office, and the one which all of us can and should fill, is that of private citizen. Words of United States Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis. Though spoken in the 1940s, the words remain true today. While the most important office is that of private citizen, the most important duty of a private citizen is to participate in the electoral process and to vote. Good afternoon. Welcome to all of you here in person and online. Today, we engage in a critical forum with seven of the candidates running in next month's election for the mayor of Chicago. All mayoral candidates were invited. Mr. Willie Wilson and Alderman Roderick Sawyer could not join us, but they have promised to complete our pre-forum questionnaire, and when received, we will post them on the Access Living website. Our forum will focus on disability and people with disabilities to better inform our community as to who is most deserving of their votes. The format for this forum is as follows. First, each candidate will be asked to provide a 2-minute opening statement. Then I will be asking the candidates 5 issue-based questions on a rotating basis by last name. If time permits, there may be 1 or more bonus questions. Finally, each candidate will have an opportunity to provide a 2-minute closing statement. Unfortunately, we will not be able to field questions from the audience directly to the candidates. Candidates in the audience, with all due respect to each of you, the most important person here this afternoon is Mr. Ken Walden. Mr. Walden is Access Living's managing attorney. Mr. Walden, you see, is our official timekeeper. He will deliberately interrupt you, not to be rude, but to prompt you regarding your permitted time. Ken, please identify yourself for the candidates. In addition to visual cues, for your 2-minute opening and closing comments, Mr. Walden will shout out when there's 30 seconds remaining and when your time is up. For your 75-second responses, he will shout out when your time is up, but will also give you a 15-second notice of your time. As this format has been agreed to by each of the candidates and their respective campaigns in advance, we trust that each of you will honor and respect the time limits imposed. As a preliminary softball question to all candidates, by a show of raised hands, do you promise to behave and adhere to our time constraints? And adhere to our time constraints. Raise hands, please. Excellent. We're off to a great start. We're mindful that one measure of a good mayor is to live up to their promises. So we shall see. To the audience, we recognize that you may have a favorite candidate on stage, and you may want to show your enthusiasm and support for them. So as not to interrupt the flow and to keep us on time, I ask that you refrain from verbally cheering or clapping until the very end of the forum. That said, if you cannot control your enthusiasm as your candidate speaks, I encourage you to do so using the deaf applause, which our sign language interpreters will demonstrate. Perfect. On Access Living's website, accessliving.org, you can find a copy of the candidates' biographies and responses to the free pre-forum questionnaire. With all that behind us, we are pleased to welcome incumbent Mayor Lori Lightfoot, Illinois State Representative Cam Buckner, United States Congressman Chuy Garcia, neighborhood advocate and entrepreneur Mr. Jamal Green, Cook County Commissioner Brandon Johnson, Alderman Sophia King, and the former CEO of Chicago and Philadelphia Public Schools, Mr. Paul Vallis. Now let's begin. Candidates, I invite each of you to make your 2-minute opening statement. Please include in your statement, what should our disability audience know about you and why you're running for mayor? And if you happen to identify as a person with a disability as well, we'd love to know. We'll start with Representative Buckner.
Good afternoon, everyone. Andres, thank you for the introduction, and thank you, everybody, for taking the time to be here today on this very important set of issues and topics to us and to our city and to Access Living. Thank you not just for today, but for your 40 years of advocacy for the disability community. My name is Cam Buckner. I'm a state representative. I am a son of Chicago, born and raised in this city. I'm a father. I'm a husband. I'm an advocate. For the majority of my personal and professional career, I have advocated for Chicagoans with disabilities. Whether it was my 6 years I spent on the staff of U.S. Senator Dick Durbin in Washington, D.C., working with the veterans community, or my time as the executive director of World Sports Chicago, where we brought adaptive sports to young people around Chicago, created a adaptive sports curriculum, and hosted the Valor Games, a 3-day event for thousands of service-connected disabled veterans in Chicago. The first bill I passed in the General Assembly, HB 3437, created the Developmental Disabilities Awareness Fund. Chicago has a golden opportunity to be the most accessible city in the entire country. I will tell you that I'm the only person on the stage who has presented a comprehensive standalone plan for inclusion and adaptability and accessibility for every single Chicagoan, no matter what their status is. My mother is here today, and before she became a Chicago public school education teacher, she worked at a school called Esperanza Therapeutic Day School. This is part of who we are as a family. This work is very important to me, and this city deserves a mayor who will take it seriously and who will go above and beyond to make this the most accessible city in the entire nation. Thank you.
Congressman Garcia.
Thank you, Andres, and good afternoon to all of you. I want to thank Access Living and the partner organizations, the members, and the larger audience out there. Delighted to be here today, and congratulations on your work. The recent gift from Mackenzie Scott is a testament to your decades of championing the cause of this community. My family is a part of this community, and that's why this conversation is so important to me, and I thank you for hosting this event. My wife, who is living with MS and two grandchildren who are special education students in Chicago, are my direct connection to the community. Throughout my career, whether in local government or currently in Congress, advancing this community and its rights has been a part of my work. In the Illinois Senate, I championed the Illinois Language Assistance Act, which also assists and affects people with disabilities, especially people with speech or hearing impediments as it relates to emergency room care or long-term care as well. I think the saying, "nothing for us, without us," encapsulates what this movement is all about. I identify with it because I think that it's important that this struggle be about home living arrangements, access to transportation, public accommodations, recreation, and public safety. If we're going to be true to the idea that all of us are created equal, we cannot leave anyone behind. Thus, implementation of ADA and other advances for this community is critical, and that's why I'm glad to participate in this forum today. Thank you.
Congressman, if you need coffee this afternoon, it's quite understandable. Just ask. Just ask.
I just got here from D.C. Thank you.
Mr. Green.
My name is Jamal Green. I'm so delighted to be here today. A big shout out to Access Living and all of the partners who put together this forum to really get a discussion going about how the next mayor will ensure that the ADA is compliant all across the city and all departments. I'm from Inglewood and Inglewood and Gresham, as well as from North Lawndale. And I was raised by my grandmother and my grandfather, who just happened to be deaf. And my grandmother, who every time I came home from school, set me in front of different letters and words so that she can teach me sign language. I think that she's a little disappointed at how much I've taken from her since then. And it is so important that we have a mayor today that really keeps their promises. I'm running for mayor because I've heard candidate forums before. I've heard mayoral candidates talk about what they're going to do for communities, what they're going to do from all types of different groups in our city. And I've also seen year after year how they have not fulfilled those promises. We need a mayor right now who is in touch with the people, who has a connection to the neighborhoods, who is going to have the backbone to make sure that everything that they say that they're going to do in the campaign is what they're going to do when they're in office. This is the time that we can have a movement of all people throughout the city of Chicago, and make sure that we can create a future that we can all believe in. And we're also today opening up our second office at 3411 West North Avenue that is fully accessible as well. So you can join us there as well. Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to answering the questions today.
Commissioner Johnson.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Access Living, to all the partners and the individuals that are here today. My name is Brandon Johnson. I've had the honor and privilege of serving as Cook County Commissioner representing the west side of Chicago and the western suburbs. However, the best job that I've ever had is that of a public school teacher, teaching in Cabrini-Green, USA, middle school students, and teaching a year of high school. at Westinghouse on the west side of Chicago, where my wife and I are raising our three children in Austin. You know, but it was in Cabrini-Green where my politics sharpened, because my students and the families, out of their back windows, they could see the wealth of this city. They could hear it. They could smell it. But out of their front windows, they saw bulldozers preparing to destroy their public housing. For too long in this city, families have been chasing down an economy that's behind us while everything in front of us has been crumbling. And Cabrini-Green has been the epicenter of where possibilities and promises, but the brutal reality of inequality collides. That's why I'm running for mayor of Chicago, because I believe it can be different. It's personal, like many of us on this stage today. I have two brothers who have suffered from mental health challenges, and one brother who died unhoused and addicted. I wonder if his life would have been spared had we had services. But the truth of the matter is that city government has failed over and over again to deliver. And 32 years ago, of course, we all know that the passage of the American Disability Act was there to bring civil rights for all. As mayor of Chicago, I'm committed to making sure that the marginalized communities in which I'm raising my family in, where individuals with disabilities overwhelmingly make up these communities, that you have a mayor that is committed to bringing real justice to every single family throughout the city of Chicago. Thank you.
Alderman King.
Thank you. And thank you for putting this together. Appreciate being a part of this. I'm running for mayor because I love the city. But we are at a pivotal point in our city. There's so much dissension between this administration and the police, between this administration and our teachers, between this administration and our colleagues who are speaking with their feet. We need somebody who can lead with collaboration and not confrontation. I've been able to show this over the last 6 years as alderman, where we've led the fight for a $15 minimum wage, which brought 400,000 people a livable wage and 100,000 an even better wage. It also brought people with disabilities a pay hike as well. We're also leading former Michael Reese development, which is being heralded as one of the most equitable developments in the country, where we brought $25 million commitment to schools. We have a commitment to 20% affordable housing on site, which is also good for people with disabilities because we know that they are disproportionately more likely to need affordable housing. We also need a mayor that understands how to bring people together, how to represent the entire city and not just segregated portions of it. We've been able to show this. I represent from downtown to Hyde Park with Bronzeville in the middle. The number one request I get because of the unwieldy crime is for more police presence. We know that police aren't the only solution, but they're part of the solution. And so we also know that an accessible Chicago is a strong Chicago, that an equitable Chicago is a strong Chicago, and a strong Chicago is a safe Chicago. Thank you.
Mayor Lightfoot.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. Let me talk to you about why it is, from day one of my administration, we have worked tirelessly to make Chicago the most accessible city in the country. For me, it's very personal. Many of you know that my father was a deaf man. He lost his hearing when he was in his early 20s. And I saw with my own eyes, up close and personal, what it meant to be a person in this country living with disability. Lack of job opportunities, lack of opportunities to be a part of a larger community, and the roadblocks and hurdles that consistently stood in his way. And I made a commitment to myself, watching my father's struggles, that I would do everything I can to make sure that we created a better community, a better society for people living with disabilities. I brought with me today a notebook, one of many that I've kept over the years. These are the notes that I wrote back and forth so that my father and I could communicate. This book happens to go back to 2002. My father's been gone now for about 12 years, but the lessons that I learned watching him and his challenges and struggles, they are part of the value system that I bring to this job. But folks, I don't have to just talk to you about a value system. I can talk to you about concrete, tangible things that we have done, whether it's eliminating the disgraceful subminimum wage, whether it's standing up a career center that has now serviced over 100 clients and gotten a quarter of them full-time job, whether it's a way in which we've deployed economic resources to build housing for the visually impaired and otherwise, the streetscapes that we have put in to make sure that they're accessible. It's a long list of which I am very proud, and we are going to continue to move forward. Thank you, sir, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
And Mr. Velez.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Four years ago, I came here before you, and we debated these issues, and I offered my prescription on what we need to do to take responsibility for our inaction for so many decades in not serving the disability community. You know, let me point out that my tenure involved me working with individuals and learning from individuals who made an extraordinary commitment to the disability community. As city budget director, working with Larry Gorski in the first mayor's office of disabilities, both expanding that office, expanding the services, identifying what the needs were, and obviously advocating for it. And then later on, as a school superintendent, working with Mark Bristow and this great organization, when we did our $3.2 billion capital plan and we renovated 350 buildings to make them ADA accessible and opened 78 new buildings that were fully in compliance. You know, so those formative years have influenced the way I've approached this issue. And my approach to this issue is to look at the community as a part of the larger community, and not a one-off community, and not a special community, but the community. Because questions about accessibility, questions about equal opportunities, questions about housing, questions about income equality need to be ingrained into our thinking, whether it's our budgets, it's our programs, it's our staffing, it's our hiring, it's our contracting. That is ultimately our responsibility. I have no question about the motivations or the commitments of everyone on this table for individuals who have struggled and individuals who have challenged. But the thing is, rhetoric is not results, and I'll be defined by my results. Thank you.
Thank you. Our first issue-based question focuses on housing. People with disabilities and the elderly have a legal right to receive long-term care services in their own home instead of an institution like a nursing home or a psychiatric hospital. Throughout the country, a major and persistent barrier to community integration is the absence of accessible and affordable housing. Chicago, unfortunately, is no different. Thus, our question, candidates, is this: what specific actions will you take to increase the availability of affordable and accessible housing for people with disabilities throughout the city, especially in decades-long disinvested neighborhoods like Woodlawn, Hyde Park, South Shore, and Pullman, which are among the 16 city neighborhoods which, according to the United States Census Bureau's American Community Survey data, have the highest number of people with disabilities? You each will have 75 seconds. Let's begin with Congressman Garcia.
Thank you. The city is, of course, facing a severe housing crisis. My priorities as mayor would be to engage and bring about comprehensive community development, which links housing, transportation, access to health care, and access to shopping services. I would use federal funds and local funds, including TIF funds, to increase funding with grants and subsidized loans to help homeowners remain in their homes in areas that are rapidly gentrifying by making them accessible, energy efficient, and internet connected. At the same time, I would streamline the process that nonprofit and other low-income housing developers want to undertake to build housing on Chicago's South Side, on the West Side, and other places. cases. Lastly, I introduced legislation by the name of Equitable Transit-Oriented Development to create incentives for building affordable housing near transit hubs across Chicagoland. The planning process required is that of including organizations like Access Living. That's my commitment. That's the community that I come from. That's how I would act as mayor. Thank you.
Mr. Green.
We must make sure that we're increasing our affordable housing supply. They've promised thousands and thousands of units to be built since, you know, many years, even after they knocked down the project buildings. They have not made good on those promises. We must increase our affordable housing supply in record numbers. So a few of the things that we would do is we will incentivize, whether it be grocery stores, whether it be banks, single floor buildings to be able to build a floor above and make it fully accessible and incentivize them to do so. We would also create a public bank, right? So we can have an economic engine that can invest in income-based housing that's fully accessible, in which the bank would be able to invest back into the community, and all of the profit that comes back from the bank goes back into city services. And when you talk about the bank, one of the things is home ownership, and we must make sure that we're removing those barriers that the banks have put in place, and that's one thing the bank will do. And we must hold accountable the current developers who are not keeping up with their properties. I got senior facilities who have elevators that aren't even working. We must make sure that the mayor's office has a bully pulpit and hold accountable every developer in the city that's currently running.
Commissioner Johnson.
Yeah, thank you for this question. First of all, housing is a human right. I grew up in a large family, it was 10 of us. We grew up with one bathroom, so I've learned how to negotiate, especially with my sisters. But having a mother with a chronic illness, it was important that my father, who was also a carpenter and a pastor, think about the pressure I was under growing up, to build another bathroom on the first floor, right? And so this is why I'm a big proponent and a supporter of the real estate transfer tax, to make sure that we are dealing with the unhoused, 65,000 families that are unhoused. Many of them have been criminalized because of their disability. And so making sure that those resources are available to not only create more affordable housing, but make sure that we have a revenue stream to do that. It's the second thing. We have to make sure that we're doing everything in our power to continue to decriminalize many of the policies that have made it hard for families to access housing. It's why I was the chief sponsor of the Just Housing Amendment that eliminated discrimination against those who were formerly incarcerated seeking housing. And Access Living was a part of that coalition that testified to make sure that there were reasonable accommodations for those families. And so as mayor of Chicago, I'm committed to making sure that housing is a human right. And then finally, I believe there should be a moratorium on land where public housing used to be occupied, that we do not build on that land. Thank you.
Alderman King.
Yeah, thank you. I know that all Chicagoans are more than frustrated by the rising costs of housing that's outpaced incomes, and that's it more exacerbated for Chicagoans with disabilities. Listen, affordable housing is the responsibility of the entire city and not just segregated portions of it. So it happened intentionally, and so we have to be equally measured about our intention to get out of that. Equity just doesn't happen in a vacuum. What I've been able to show as alderman of the 4th Ward is to intentionally bring affordable housing to the projects that we've had, whether it's downtown, on Michigan Avenue, on Wabash, whether it's in Hyde Park, or whether it's in Bronzeville, like I talked about, the Michael Reese development, where we encourage the developer to have affordable housing on site, which is unheard of in terms of a development. So again, we have to be very intentional about making sure that we have affordable housing, which disproportionately impacts people with disabilities.
Thank you. I'm going to build in a slight delay between speakers for the benefit of the audience. Mayor Lightfoot.
One of the things that I'm proud of is that despite the fact that we inherited about 120,000 unit deficit in affordable housing, we've taken big, bold strides to make sure that we're righting that historic wrong. And every housing project that we invest in, particularly the ones that are affordable, are also accessible. We made a commitment in December of 2021 to $1 billion in affordable housing projects all across our city that, when built, will take the first big strides in breaking down segregation across our city. The other thing that's important related to housing and access for people with disability is making sure that they are empowered to be able to live and rent and own those units. So our Center for Disability Careers has serviced of over 100 clients since it opened back in the summer. Over a quarter of those people have gotten full-time jobs, and we are doing more and more to make sure that housing everywhere is accessible, as well as transportation. And we just got a $118 million grant from the U.S. Department of Transportation to continue the work to make sure that our stations are accessible.
Mr. Vallis.
Thank you. Look, first, let's start enforcing the ordinances and the mandates that are on the books right now. We're constantly imposing new mandates, new ordinances, and what are the outcomes? Secondly, we've got to look at exploring expanding benefits. And we have to understand that ultimately in our families, particularly as our parents are, as we grow older, there will be someone in our families who are individuals who will have to live with disabilities. And we've got to recognize that in our building codes, and we have to recognize that in our housing projects and the type of supports and incentives we provide for new housing. Third, let's remove the obstacles to building new housing, and let's remove the obstacles to allowing individuals who have who are landlords who have garden units to convert those unimproved space to garden units. There are hundreds of thousands of spaces, and normally they're first floor accessible spaces. The fourth thing is we have 15,000 vacant buildings that are in some phase of housing court, etc. Why could we not secure those buildings, turn them over to community-based organizations and housing advocates to provide housing for people with disabilities, to homeless, domestic violence? And finally, we need to cap individual homeowners' property taxes to fight against gentrification. So those are five things that I think we could do. Thank you.
Representative Buckner.
So I've heard this once, but I want to say it again. Housing is a human right. Housing is a human right. One of the first things we got to do is look at the real estate transfer tax, not just being able to work with Springfield, which I can do on day one, to make sure that we can increase it in a reasonable way and earmark dollars for our homelessness issue here, but to use the money that's already coming into the RETT for our homelessness problem. Currently, no money from the real estate transfer tax goes to our homelessness issue. Secondly, we need to pass and enforce a city ordinance that requires that all new affordable housing built in Chicago is accessible. We need to provide grants to make sure that we can convert residential units that are not accessible today. We have to also establish a cabinet-level position in City Hall who will work on this and this alone, affordable housing and accessibility, to make sure that every member of our society can benefit from that. We also know we have a real data problem. We need to make sure and mandate that CHA is providing the right data so we know where the accessible housing exists and where it doesn't. We also need to expand housing by allowing more ADUs and looking at the single-family zoning ordinances to make sure that we can bring more folks into neighborhoods who need to be there.
Thank you all. The next question focuses on mental health supports. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, adults with disabilities report experiencing frequent mental distress almost five times as often as our non-disabled counterparts. The pandemic shone a light on the issue of mental health and the need for mental health services. The negative impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic have affected all of us. However, the isolation, disconnect, disrupted routines, and diminished health services that have greatly impacted the lives and the mental well-being of people with disabilities. While the city's budget for mental health services has increased since 2019, several community-based mental health services have closed. So, candidates, our question is this. What will you do to make long-term community-based mental health services and supports available and accessible to people with disabilities in the city? You each will have 75 seconds, and in 10 seconds, we'll start with Mr. Green. Mr. Green.
We must pass treatment, not trauma, and we must reopen the mental health clinics that were closed many years ago. And those mental health clinics, in our view, are we would create more innovative institutions called healing houses where we can tackle mental health holistically, and it be a place where people want to attend so that they can wind down and or get the mental health services that they need. Well, those institutions will also have mobile units for those folks who cannot leave their home to go to them throughout the city of Chicago. We must also make sure that we're investing in those community organizations who are doing the work throughout the city. They are not getting the support that they deserve, and the city needs to be a partner to make sure that those services continue reaching outside of the institutions that we invest in. We must also make sure that we have the correct ratios in our school buildings for young people who are experiencing mental health, who also have disabilities, and that we are going to invest in making sure that we have counselors throughout the schools all throughout the city of Chicago. So those are some of the few things that we would do to address our mental health crises.
Commissioner Johnson.
Well, before we start our time, Alderwoman King got really excited during Jamal's answer. So we're just, her and Lori are collaborating over here. Anything is possible, you all. All right. All right. We good? All right. You know, as I indicated earlier, my older brother, who was my hero, Leon, was very talented. He's a good-looking fella, too. He had a Jerry curl back in the day. He had untreated trauma. And, again, because we didn't have the language for it or the facilities for it. He died unhoused, and he had died addicted. And so, you know, the movement that pushed back against the previous administration for closing down mental health clinics, I was a part of that movement. I'm also part of the movement that is pushing back against this administration for refusing to reopen them. And so, absolutely, we need to pass the treatment, not trauma, ordinance, which the movement that is behind my candidacy supports, and I support it wholeheartedly because many of you in this room, we struggle together with it. We also have to recognize that we have to make it more accessible. I'm sure our older persons and as a county commissioner, the type of trauma that we are seeing in our district offices is actually quite pervasive. The fact that many of the calls that are coming through 911 right now are related to the trauma that people are experiencing. So it's a matter of investing. It's a matter of prioritizing it. It's a matter of making sure that the personal agenda that we all have collectively to make sure that we're treating people and not reinforcing the trauma, that as Mayor of Chicago, I'm committed to that. Thank you.
Thank you, and apologies. I hope I didn't throw you off, brother. That was not my intention.
In a second, Alderman. Please proceed, Alderman King.
So thank you. So while we don't know the exact numbers for people with disabilities, with mental health insecurities, or people with mental health insecurities in general, so we need to do a better job of data and transparency around that. I think that's the first thing. In order to figure out how we can grow, we need to figure out where we are right now. That being said, there are a number of things that we can do right now. We had the opportunity to reopen mental health clinics. That was something that I fought to do almost singularly when Mayor Rahm Emanuel was here to start to open up those clinics, to start that conversation. It is a missed opportunity that we not only haven't opened up clinics, but we haven't funded the ones that we have here appropriately. I was happy to be a part of a group as a leader of the Progressive Caucus to make sure that we had and funded clinicians for this current budget, but I don't think that that's been allocated yet as well. So we really have to make sure, again, that we're strategic about what we're doing and that we implement the things that are important to our city like this.
Mayor Lightfoot.
So in talking about mental health services, I'm very proud of the work that we've done. We ended the year of 2022 servicing over 60,000 Chicago residents, and we have opened up community-based, culturally relevant mental health services for free in all of our 77 neighborhoods for the first time in the history of Chicago. When I entered office, there was a lot of conversation about reopening the mental health clinics, and I thought about that too and argued for it. But then what I heard from the experts and what I heard from patients is that they didn't want clinician care that our clinics offered. What they wanted was to be able to go to culturally relevant services in their neighborhood, and that's precisely what we've done. We have increased the mental health budget sevenfold since I went into office. We're now providing those services in all 77 neighborhoods for free, regardless of your ability to pay, regardless of your citizenship status, and for the first time ever, we are now serving children and adolescents. That is a record that we all should be proud of because we're helping Chicagoans. Thank you.
Addressing the mental...
Mr. Vallis, if you please hold one.
Slow down, everybody.
The coffee.
Please proceed, Mr. Vallis.
Thank you. Addressing the mental health needs in the community really requires that you not only reopen the mental health clinics, and they need to be community-run and owned and operating clinics, but you literally need to have one in every police station. And if you're seeking the federal and state reimbursements, as well as reimbursements from private insurance providers, those facilities can be funded. God knows why. They went from 19 mental health facilities to 12 when Rahm Emanuel came in, and Rahm eliminated the 12. I mean, it's just the savings was minuscule. So it's critically important. But the reopening of mental health facilities have got to be part of the need to reestablish the community infrastructure, community social service infrastructure. I lost a son to long-term drug addictions, opioid addiction centers, crisis counseling centers, community intervention centers, family counseling. So at the end of the day, rebuilding the social service infrastructure that's so critical to addressing the needs of people in the community really begins by not only reopening the existing mental health clinics or the clinics that have been closed, but really opening a community-based, operated, and managed mental health facility in literally every police district. Thank you.
Representative Buckner.
Thank you. I do believe that I'm the only candidate in this race who has come forth with a specific mental health plan for Chicago. In that plan, we talk about reopening 20 clinics around the city in the places where they're needed the most. We also talk about four of those clinics or institutions being anchor institutions that are 24 hours a day, 365 days a week, one on the north side, one on the south side, one on the west side, and one near and around our downtown central business district. We hear a lot about where care should come from and who provides care. But making Chicagoans choose between having private mental health care and public mental health care is like saying we can't have both libraries and bookstores. It makes no sense. What we've also called for is investment in the Peace Book Ordinance at the city council level to make sure we're putting money into the community organizations who have been doing this work on the ground every single day. And I also want to talk about the work that I've done in Springfield as a champion and a co-sponsor of CESA, which is a Community Emergency Service and Support Act, which we worked with Access Living to get passed to make sure that we had mobile units to respond to people who were going through mental health crises.
and Congressman Garcia.
Thank you. The lack of access to health care and to public health services is rooted, of course, in inequities, racial as well as economic. The pandemic exacerbated these inequities, and of course, there's a greater need for mental health services today. Specifically, here's what my priorities would be. Expand access to health care to ensure that mental health services are available to all communities, whether it's Chatham, Little Village, or Uptown. Hire more mental health clinicians in the city and county clinics to finally expand who we're serving in collaboration with the county. That's critical. The city spends $89 million, the county around $80 million. We need to work together to get a bigger bang and services to people. We need to provide additional resources, including mental health staff, to community clinics as well, and bring coordinated health care. We cannot continue to work in silos. Collaboration is key. The people in our communities deserve it. Thank you.
Thank you. Now let's talk about education with a real focus on shortages. In the area of special education, there are teacher shortages which have persisted for years, with an estimated 14% of students needing some type of special education service. Special education teachers play a key role in making sure all students have a chance to thrive academically. There are many factors that contribute to the shortage, among them stressful working conditions, low pay, and insufficient support for special education teachers. Within the Chicago Public Schools, there are currently over 600 vacant special education teacher positions. Candidates, share with us what your specific plans are to fill those vacancies and to ensure that those special education teachers are qualified and suitable for their positions. You each will have 75 seconds. We'll start with Commissioner Johnson in 10 seconds. Commissioner Johnson.
Well, thank you for the question. As a public school teacher, I can certainly tell you firsthand what it looks like to have schools that are disinvested in. And as mayor of Chicago, you'll finally actually have a mayor when you elect me who actually believes in public education. And you certainly won't have to sue my administration to get special education to cooperate with state guidelines. So that's why I've been a strong proponent of making sure that we're investing in programs like Grow Your Own that provide opportunities from individuals from communities that are most impacted by the disinvestment to become public school teachers. It's why I've been pushing hard for class size caps. Many of our schools that have been disinvested in communities like my wife and I are raising our kids in Austin, 30% in many schools, special education is the population. It's why, again, expanding funding and making sure that we have not just special education teachers, but even paraprofessionals. I'm glad that Mrs. Garcia is here, who led a really nice career in supporting our teachers. This is also an opportunity to create a pathway for SECAs or teachers' assistants to become special education teachers. And so, you know, again, I don't know if there's anyone else on this platform that has more of an incentive for special education and education to work than someone who is sending all three of their kids to the public schools. Thank you.
Alderman King.
Yes, thank you. As an educator myself, I also understand the importance of education. More importantly, the importance of having a good teacher. I think we're talking about, you know, how do we retain good teachers? And I would say special education teachers are at the top of that list. What I would do is to create incentives to keep teachers and to incentivize new teachers to come into Chicago. I would give them interest-free loans so that they could build homes in the communities where we most need them. We can do that. We can do that by bonding the credit for that. We can also sell them vacant lots so we can build the communities as we also incentivize teachers to come into our community. So that is something that I would do on day one to bring an incentive program to make sure that we keep teachers. Teachers are leaving now faster than we can keep them. They're the one profession where we throw everything at their feet that we're unable to resolve and ask them to do it. They need that incentive.
Mayor Lightfoot.
Ladies and gentlemen, there clearly is a nationwide shortage and lots of critical frontline workers, teachers and special ed teachers being top among them. What we have been doing through CPS is collaborating with the city colleges to build a pipeline of teachers into CPS, making sure that we are collaborating with groups like Teach for America and other groups that bring just newly minted teachers into our system, and making sure that we're fulfilling our contractual responsibilities negotiated with the Chicago Teachers Union to also have a range of other supports for those families. But most importantly is listening to the students and their families and tailoring IEPs that meet the needs of individual students with a holistic way of wraparound services, so that we are making sure that regardless of the ability to learn, that these children are set up for success. And that means putting our money where our mouth is, hiring the teachers, hiring the paraprofessionals, and making sure that we continue to meet our lawful and contractual obligations. That is the track record that we have done, and more to come, but we're proud of that record.
Mr. Velas.
I've run four of the largest school districts in four different states, and all had major vacancy issues. All those issues were eliminated by doing the following. First of all, establishing a relationship with all the teacher colleges and universities by actually subsidizing student teachers to come in and to teach in my schools, not only doing their student teaching, but also working as paid interns and teacher aides. Usually 50% of those teachers who would come and do their student teaching actually remained, and 95% of them decided to stay past their first year. Secondly, by expanding alternative certifications, because there are in New Orleans, we worked with St. Xavier and Dillard University to, in effect, allow graduate students to earn elective credits by becoming certified teachers to teach in our schools. And then the third, it's through allowing individuals in the professions, in the medical professions, in the social services to, in fact, become alternatively certified and become teachers in their own right. The bottom line, though, that somebody has to ask is, when you look at the Chicago Public School owned database, there's one teacher for every 17 employees, and there is for every 17 students, and there is one employee for every student. So the question is, how are those resources being allocated?
Representative Buckner.
Thank you. In 1968, Anita Chantel Wynn was born. She was my mother's baby sister, and she was born with disabilities. She only lived to the spring of 1970. But my mother's experience with her is what drove her to a career in special education, as it did two of my mother's sisters, my Aunt Mary and my Aunt Ola. Between the three of them, they have a century of public school special education background experience and service. Listen, we know how to deal with a worker shortage. The first thing we have to do is realize that we have to pay our special education teachers more. We have to acknowledge the fact that we have not put them in the best position to succeed, and they're working against really tough odds, and there needs to be remuneration there that can help them. Secondly, we have to give our special education teachers the tools they need and deserve to be successful. That means more planning time. That means more resources. That means the district never buying into or creating curriculum that is not accessible for every single student in CPS. That's a problem. And thirdly, the 1973 Rehabilitation Act, Section 504, requires that there's a free, appropriate public education for every young child identifies with disability. We should work with the federal government and Congressman Garcia to do that.
Congressman Garcia.
Thank you. accept the challenge from my colleague in the Illinois House, one. Two, I've been working on building the teacher pipeline and focus emphasis on special education teachers. The Grow Your Own program was one of the programs we had at a nonprofit that I founded and headed for 10 years. Recently in Congress, I introduced the Diversify Act. Similarly, it seeks to provide incentives for teachers, college students in college to become teachers and focus on special education as well so that we can diversify our teaching core. Also, it provides incentives for them by increasing the TEACH grants that are there. But overall, I would work to fully fund schools in our public education system in Chicago, as with other school systems across Illinois. I would work with the legislature. I'll return the favor, representative, by doubling the amount of funding from Springfield to $700 million, which is what CPS should be getting. And lastly, CPS should use incentives to recruit, to fund required coursework. And yes, planning periods are critical so that we don't burn people who are committed to this community and create a better environment. Thank you.
And Mr. Green.
Where would we be without teachers? All of us in this room can all say that teachers help make us who we are today. And that's why we must make sure that every student in the city of Chicago, even those who experience disabilities, get a high-quality education and gets their needs to be met. We must address our teaching shortages by making sure that community college is free, by making sure that we can give the down payment and closing costs so that they can own a home in the city of Chicago, by making sure that we're allocating the resources how they should be. Somehow there's all these billions of dollars, but somehow we're constantly talking about the same things over and over again on why our teachers aren't paid, why our teachers don't have the resources in their schools. We must make our schools an environment where everyone wants to also teach. And that's making sure that the leadership do what they're supposed to do to work with the state and the federal government to increase funding for our public school system. We got to move away from the enrollment-based formula and move to a needs-based formula in the city of Chicago so that all schools get the correct funding that they deserve.
Thank you. Transportation is the focus of our fourth question. State and local governments have an overarching legal obligation to ensure that people of all categories of disabilities can participate in all aspects of civic life. To do so, a city must ensure that it has and maintains a transportation infrastructure, one that is accessible and available to all people with disabilities. When we refer to a transportation infrastructure, we are referring to combination of public rights of way, that is sidewalks and other pedestrian pathways, rail transit, fixed route bus transportation, on-demand vehicular transportation, and ADA paratransit. And while owned by private entities, for our purposes here, we're including taxis and ride sharing, as the city controls the licensing of those services and issues ordinances dictating the conditions under which they operate. So, candidates, our question is this. What investment would you make to improve Chicago's transportation infrastructure and ensure it is more accessible for people with disabilities? And what regulatory changes would you make, if any? You each will have 75 seconds, beginning in 10 seconds with Alderman King. Alderman King.
Yeah, so as Alderman, I've seen firsthand how the inequities in transportation distribution has impacted not only people with disabilities, but our elders who are also disproportionately in that category as well. I helped the elders in our community reestablish the 43rd Street bus, which they were trying to literally stop on Sundays. And a number of them said that they weren't able to. access that or get to church on Sundays. And so we fought hard to serve that. So I know that. But I think one thing is critical is collaboration here, because we should be thinking about regional transportation so that we can use those economies of scales of savings. So the RTA governs us. We should bring the Metra, the RTA, the PACE, all of those things together under one umbrella, but that would take collaboration with the county, with the state, and with the feds. But if we do that, we could come together and have a world-class transportation system, which would then make it more accessible and, of course, then more accessible to people with disabilities.
Mayor Lightfoot?
Well, I think the question was about accessibility of our transportation systems for people with disabilities. Good news that came in December of 2002, we applied for and won a $118 million grant from USDOT to continue the work of making all of our CTA stations accessible. We started that program in Chicago, modeled and scaled it up, working with Senator Duckworth. It has now become federal policy, and we are getting those federal dollars back to continue that work. All of the modernization that we're doing across our system has a disability mandate in all of it. The red purple line modernization on the north side, and now that we are finally going to see the extension of the red line down to 138th Street, all of those stations will be accessible. In addition to that, all of the hundreds of miles of streetscapes that we have put in the last 4 years, we've done it with an eye towards making sure that the sidewalks and the roads are also accessible and protective of people with disabilities, including traffic signals that reflect the needs of the visually impaired. So we are very focused on our transportation system being accessible.
Mr. Vallis.
Look, our goal, our overriding goal should be 100% accessibility. And it needs to be comprehensive. It's just not the stations and the trains and the platforms and the vehicles, but as the mayor pointed out, it's the sidewalks, it's the roads, et cetera. We're either going to make it as a goal, and it needs to be comprehensive, and we need to pursue it. But I'll tell you, we also have to deal with another issue of accessibility. What is adversely impacting the CTA right now is violence. The ridership is down what? Is it still down about 500,000 a day? What I would do is I would eliminate the privatized security, and I would hire additional police officers so that the platforms can be covered, so that the train stations can be covered, so that, like they do in New York, you can have officers from time to time riding trains, both undercover and in uniform. Because at the end of the day, all too often, we're all victimized, but people with disabilities are often victimized the most. So we've really got to recognize that if we're going to revitalize our public public transit system, a system that is now has now lost so much in the fare box that only 18% of its operating costs are coming from the fare box, we're going to need to make the system safe.
Representative Buckner.
Thank you. I took the CTA here today, as I often do. I'm a CTA rider, and I see firsthand that this system is very inaccessible. We've got work to do. We've got 145 L stations. Only 103 of those have elevators. The other 42, they haven't been upgraded in decades. So, number one, we've got to be very serious about that and be aggressive about those upgrades. There are people like Mike Irvin and the Chicago Adapt and Access Living, who have been fighting these fights for a long time, chaining themselves to buses for 40 years to create some accessibility here in the city. We still have not done enough. I will make the CTA 100% accessible as mayor, period. We also will make our paratransit services better, make them easier to book online digitally for folks who need them. We also need a municipal plow program for people who try to maneuver through this city during the snow, when we have snowfall. We have not been kind and or fair to them. I also will say that every time we do a bike lane or a sidewalk or any streetscape in this city, I will have a safety and accessibility score through CDOT that has to happen before we begin the project. Thank you.
Congressman Garcia.
Thank you. When I was elected to Congress, I identified the committee I wanted to be on, my number one priority, transportation and infrastructure. Why? Because I knew there would be an opportunity to deliver for infrastructure across the country and certainly for Chicago, and delivered we have. The mayor has made reference to the $118 million, but the infrastructure law will continue to bring resources to Chicago over a 10-year period. Two, what I've already done is to secure the funding that was mentioned to make Metro Stops ADA accessible through the All-Station Accessibility Program, ASAP, and do it ASAP. In addition to that, we need to integrate more closely the CTA, Metro, PACE, and the RTA to ensure that communities grow. We need real collaboration between them and the Departments of Housing Planning and Transportation. My plan is this. In the next year, there will be new funding and a potential reorganization for the RTA partners. We need to have commuter rail lines better serve all of Chicago neighborhoods. And above all, we need on-time performance, and that must be the metric. And buses and trains must be made safer.
Mr. Green?
Sorry, I was pushed by my son over here who's snoring. He's supposed to be watching his father. and so, you know, it's so important that the transportation infrastructure is invested in. I agree with some of the ideas here today, and we share some of the same sentiments of making sure that, you know, CTA is 100% accessible in this city, and that there's a pathway to doing so. We focus a lot on building new stations, but we have so many stations that need investment and need elevators and need updates, and we must make that a priority in the city. We also need a municipal snow removal program. That is so important during the winter. CTA right now is a huge issue. We must make it safe, clean, and fast. And address the staffing shortages there as well. And then at some point, you know, CTA, you know, we need to be piloting a program right now to make sure that folks in underserved communities can get access to it for free as well. So those are some of the ideas that we have. We need to make transportation a right in the city, and it needs to be fully accessible, and we're going to look towards doing that.
I'm grading you, Mr. Walden. A minus so far. And Commissioner Johnson.
Yeah, so thank you for the question. We have to address the staffing issue right away. The fact that we have folks who are committed to more policing, where there is well documentation, where those who are most likely to experience brutality are those with disabilities. That's a failed approach, and we can't go back down that direction. One of the things that we can do is to make sure that we reinstitute what was referred to as the ambassador program, where we actually have other adults who are available on the transportation lines to not only provide support for individuals with disabilities, but just to be support for those riders. Look, my family, we rely upon public transportation, children who are going to school in opposite directions because we aren't fully funded in our neighborhoods. This is something that is definitely has to be a right. I think the last thing is we have to not only look at but fully fund a municipal program that actually plows sidewalks and make it accessible. I don't think we should continue to tippy-toe around these issues. Justice is deserved. It's been denied. As mayor of Chicago, I will deliver justice. Thank you.
Thank you all. For our fifth question, we'll focus on stopping the revolving door of the criminal justice system, including the school-to-prison pipeline. Studies have shown that up to 85% of youth in juvenile detention facilities have disabilities, that make them eligible for special education services, yet only 37% receive these services while in school. A disproportionate percentage of these detained youth are youth of color. In addition, according to the Chicago Reentry Report, a June 2020 study conducted by the University of Illinois at Chicago, approximately 97% of those incarcerated will eventually be released and returned to their communities. The process of reentry, however, is one with many challenges and an often difficult one to navigate. Studies suggest that those reentering the community will again be incarcerated at fairly high rates. In 2019, Chicago was home to 35% of returning prisoners from released from Illinois state prisons. They returned to only six of the city's 77 community areas: Austin, North Lawndale, East Garfield Park, West Inglewood, Humble Park, and Inglewood. Candidates, our question to you is this: what would you do to strengthen diversion and reentry opportunities for Chicagoans with disabilities who are impacted by the criminal system? Each of you will have 75 seconds, starting with Mayor Lightfoot in 10 seconds.
Well, this is an issue that is of, I'm sorry, you said 10 seconds.
I did, Mayor.
Obviously, I'm eager to go.
I appreciate your enthusiasm. And here we go, Mayor.
As I started to say, this is an issue that's very important and near and dear to me. I think many of you know that I am the sister of a brother who spent most of his adult life incarcerated. The last stint was 17 years in federal prison. So I have seen firsthand how devastating incarceration can be for families. And what I also know is that we have spent virtually no support for returning residents in this city, where literally thousands are coming back every month from IDOC or Cook County. So what have we done to address that issue? First of all, we hired and empowered the first ever director of reentry, which is a mayor's office position, Willette Benford, who is herself a returning resident, spent 20 plus years incarcerated. We convened a working group that still is in existence of all the stakeholders at the state, the county, and the municipal level who are working on supports for returning residents. I personally believe that you cannot talk about public safety without making sure that you have a way in which people who have served their time have a way to come back into community and be productive members of society. We are also going to be rolling out here shortly a new plan, which I'll tell you about in my closing.
Mr. Vallis.
I had the privilege of working with Sally Yates in the Justice Department on education, occupational training, reform in the criminal justice system. And what emerged from that was three things, because we used the same team to evaluate the state systems. Is number one, there are no education and occupational training alternatives to incarceration. We have drug treatment alternatives, but not education and occupational training alternatives. I would create them. Point number two, there are no reentry programs. Reentry in this state and in the city is an absolute joke. And just simply hiring somebody to lead an office is not going to change it. And then number three, we have to remove the obstacles to providing the and when I met with a reentry group the other day, they referred to themselves as returning citizens, the opportunity to secure loans, housing, grants, etc. One of the things that we did in this Sally H project was we inventoried programs, over 40 programs, all focusing on this population. But the programs had three things in common. No one takes ownership of these programs overall. No one tries to coordinate their delivery of services, and they don't have access to regular and sustainable funding. We have the pieces to have a great program. I'm going to implement it.
Representative Buckner.
I was speaking to a group of young men just a few days after Christmas who have been in and out of our penal system. And one of them told me that the reason for his recidivism is because it is easier to be dead or to go back to prison than it is to live freely. That's problematic. it means that our priorities are skewed. We can't continue down this road. Reentry is hard for everyone. But for our sisters and brothers who have disabilities, it becomes even harder. And we can talk about providing wraparound services, which we should definitely do, but we know that one size fits all does not work. And so what my campaign has called on is creating individualized reentry plans for folks with disabilities who are coming back after being involved in the criminal legal system. What does that mean? That means if you need a job, we'll help you find a job. That means if you need a venture card, we'll help you get a venture card. If you need an ID and a license, we'll help you do that. And if you need expungement help to clear out your criminal record, we'll help you do that as well. We got to be serious about how we move people forward.
Congressman Garcia.
Thank you. The Illinois Alliance for Reentry and Justice guidelines provide a robust framework for integrating a set of wraparound services with people with disabilities exiting the criminal justice system. My plan is to, one, look to address the health impacts of incarceration, programs that take a holistic look to the challenges that are encountered by returning citizens, a focus on housing, health, employment, and others. This leads to lower rates of recidivism, we know. I will pilot the use of reentry navigators in partnership with employment pathways using proven strategies by the Safer Foundation, the Revolution Workshop, and similar training programs that have demonstrated successes in facilitating the transition of returning citizens to family-sustaining jobs. The utilization of pre-apprenticeships and apprenticeships is a vehicle to do that. These are organizations that need to be supported. They're modeling the way for successful returning home for many citizens.
Mr. Green.
I'm utterly tired of politicians using those returning home for political gain. It's not enough to just say I appoint somebody to lead an office. It's not enough to make them feel that the only way that they can get any type of revenue is to put together a community program that makes you look good politically. Folks returning home should make sure that we should make sure that they have a pathway to living a middle class life, to be able to get access to real job opportunities. And we need to give them that foundation. So one of the things we push forward is our Prosperity Push pilot, where we would give $1,000 a month to 10,000 Chicagoans living in poverty. And that is also going to be for folks who return home. We're going to move forward a single-family mortgage bond to back 10,000 home loans each year, and that's also going to apply from those who return home. We are going to make sure that they have the mental health services that they need. When they come home, we need to make sure that they have temporary housing that the city will pay for until they are given a job opportunity, have the foundation they need to live on their own. We must start giving guarantees and tangibles. Enough with the political rhetoric and the offices. We need tangibles.
Commissioner Johnson.
Thank you. The Justice for Black Lives and the Budget for Black Lives legislation, that's, I am the chief sponsor of both of those that have led to hundreds of millions of dollars to go into areas of need just like this. One of the first pieces of legislation that I passed was the Just Housing Amendment, which, again, Access Living was a part of instituting that. And look, all the communities that you named, those are the communities that I represent. That's the community that I live in. And so I don't know if there's anyone else on this stage that has more of an incentive for this to work than me. Quite frankly, I think what we really have to do is get over our addiction around jails and incarceration. We spend more money locking up individuals with disabilities and mental health issues than we do investing in public schools. The folks on this stage are not going to be as clear as I am. We spend too much on jails and incarceration, and we overutilize policing as a strategy, and it's failed. And that's why now in the Just Housing Amendment, eliminated barriers. I've done that. We need to make sure that we're creating job opportunities through the millions of dollars that I've made available through both of those pieces of legislation. We cannot be afraid to call out these systems that have been oppressive and damaging to communities throughout the city of Chicago. As mayor of Chicago, you'll have a champion and someone who's committed to justice. Thank you.
And Alderman King.
Yes. So, listen, we need to bring true resources and priorities to this problem. Violence intervention is probably one of the things that we could do well in Chicago if we had the priority and the inclination to do it. We should be spending hundreds of millions of dollars on violence intervention so that we're not back here in 20, 15 years talking about this again. This administration was allocated $85 million for violence intervention and only spent $5 million this last year. That's a shame. We should be spending hundreds of millions. We have a plan that incentivizes people and returning citizens to come off the streets. $600 a week we should be giving them. $600 a week, that comes with job training, with trauma-informed care, with wraparound services for their families. We've been here before. We did this in the 40s with the Italians, with the Irish when they were fighting each other over alcohol. We called it the New Deal. We put resources towards it. We called it the 30-year mortgage. We have to put resources towards this so that we're not back here in 20 and 10 years. Thank you.
Thank you, candidates. At this time, I'd like to invite all the candidates to make a 2-minute closing statement on why disability voters should choose you for our next mayor. Mr. Vallis, in 10 seconds, we're going to start with you. Mr. Vallis.
Let me answer that question by responding to a question that you put to us in your questionnaire. You said, if you had one big idea to make Chicago the most accessible city, what would it be? Well, my idea would be to create a real empowered committee on disability represented by people within the disability community that would have the resources to audit, to assess, to evaluate, and to recommend programs that could advance the needs of the disability community. I'm talking about an entity that could hold us all accountable, because there is a lack of accountability. We talk a good game, and yet we don't deliver. And there should be a corresponding committee within the city council that would specifically focus exclusively on the disability accessibility issue, that could hold hearings, that could provide public input. Because ultimately, we need to set up a system of accountability. And you don't have accountability if you don't have transparency. You don't have accountability if you don't have a database that provides you the data. You don't have accountability if you can't assess and evaluate the quality of the programs, which we have never done. And you don't have accountability unless you give the public an opportunity to have the information that they need to make informed judgments. So I will create such an entity. And I will create and support such an entity in the city council, so the city council is a full partner in the process. Until we have that entity, we'll continue to fall far short, maybe not short on the rhetoric, but certainly short on the substance when it comes to addressing the critical issues. Because the disability community is the community. It's not a one-off community. It's a part of the community. And once we recognize that and act accordingly, we'll continue to fail, all Chicagoans. Thank you.
Representative Buckner.
Thank you. So I want to appreciate, I want to thank everybody for coming out here tonight for this. I am a son of Chicago, as I've said a few times. I was born here. I was raised here. I'm raising my family here. I'm a Chicago Public School graduate. I went to law school here. And in the General Assembly, I currently represent 10 of the 50 aldermanic wards, 20% of Chicago in Springfield. And growing up here, I remember Chicago being called the city that works. The city is not working today. But I also know that when the city that works did work, it didn't work for everybody. And so as we look at what we're going to do next and how we move our city along, we need strong leadership who can collaborate, who can bring people together, and who can find a way to yes instead of getting stuck at no. That's the Chicago that we are, and that's the Chicago that we deserve. We've heard a lot today about the ADA and making sure that we're accessible. The ADA has to be our floor, not our ceiling. We got so much more work we can do. And this is the city of big shoulders. We're bold, we're brave, we're creative. We can do it with the right leadership, and I hope to be your next mayor. Thank you.
Congressman Garcia.
Thank you to all the partners at Access Living for the opportunity to have this very personal and meaningful conversation with you about the present and the future. My commitment to the civil rights of everyone is in alignment with the people who believe in the movement for independent living, which is committed to the fundamental principle that people with disabilities are entitled to all of the civil rights, options, and control of their choices in their own lives as for people who do not have disabilities. That's why I'm here today, because disability rights are also human rights, and Chicago can only progress if we leave no one behind. Thus, equity is critical for all of us to move forward. I'm ready to fight for better access to transportation, public accommodations, and public safety on our streets. These are the issues that Chicagoans care about. I, with my experience, can navigate City Hall and the Chicago City Council, Springfield, and Washington. I want to put that experience and those relationships to work for all Chicagoans. My history as a coalition builder is unequaled by anyone running for mayor. That is what I offer Chicago, and that's why I ask for your support. Lastly, if you believe in the things that I have articulated, I only ask for one thing. Be mine and punch nine.
Mr. Green.
Chicago, you got a task on your hands. You got a task on your hands that in the next 50-plus days, you go to the polls to elect the next mayor of the city of Chicago. Let me just first say that you spent millions of dollars and taxpayer dollars on all the people here except me. I am the youngest candidate to ever run without the political experience and the political baggage of some of the people at this table today. And that's why I'm running for mayor of Chicago, because there needs to be a champion of all people. There needs to be someone who is connected to the neighborhoods, connected to this generation who is so hopeless, connected, innovative enough to bring forth new ideas to how city government should be ran in our city. We have a real opportunity to elect a collaborator, to elect somebody that you can respond to. A lot of political ideas have been shared today, but who's actually going to respond to you when they're in office? Who actually is going to do what they say they're going to do? My track record is clear. I've been a community organizer and entrepreneur over 12 years now. I've fought on behalf of all people, stood next to many of you in this room when you were fighting, led the Laquan McDonald movement, the movement against Chase Bank, the largest bank in the world, and forced them to give $1 billion back to the South and West Sides when they were redlined communities. No one on this stage was with me during that movement. So I want you to understand that when it's time to address the needs of the people, we can't continue to look at community organizers and activists as the ones who continue fighting government each day. It's time to elect an organizer to the top seat in the city who is going to respond to you. I have three young boys, all in public school, and I am going to make sure that in this city that we have a future that we can all believe in. Folks who have disabilities and everyone else. This is my promise, is that I will be responsive. I will collaborate you. I will listen to you and work with every organization in this city to make this a city we can all believe in. Punch number one, the first name that you see.
Commissioner Johnson.
Thank you very much to Access Living, to all of the advocates here that I've stood alongside of for the last decade plus, pushing back against administrations that have ignored our demands. Look, I'm living in those disenfranchised communities that we spoke of today, that they're the greatest concentration of individuals with disabilities. They're not just family members, they're neighbors. As a teacher, I advocated strong for special education students who have been ignored and denied, even when lawsuits have been put forth against this administration because of its failures. I'm glad that Jamal agrees that we should elect an organizer, because that's who I am and what I am. As an organizer, that we fought together collectively to make sure that rights for individuals with disabilities are at the forefront. It's why we fought the previous administration for shutting down mental health clinics, and why we're still fighting this administration for refusing to open them. As Cook County Commissioner, I'm the only one on this platform that has intentionally put together an entire budget for hundreds of millions of dollars to go towards mental health, transportation. We brought together Metro and PACE. CTA refuses to cooperate. Millions of dollars for violence prevention. We have the largest pilot program in the history of the world for universal basic income. That's a part of our fight. You know, look, if we're going to transform this city, and I believe we can, we got to revive the individuals who can make this city work. And those are the folks in this room. It's why if you look at all of the candidates, look at who the movement is getting around, from labor, from independent political organizations, to progressive leaders, to everyday rank and file people who see justice and equity as possible. Unfortunately, the politics of old have left us behind. It's time for us to build a better Chicago, and that's with me. Thank you very much.
Alderman King.
Thank you. And again, thank you for providing this forum. It's very informative. So again, you know, I'm running for mayor because it's a pivotal time in our city, and we truly need somebody who can bring us together, who can lead by collaboration. We also need somebody who can get things done. We also need somebody who has done this, who's tried and true. Over the last 6.5 years, I've shown and I've led by a lot of the things that we've talked about today, whether it's affordable housing, I've done that, been a leader in that, whether it's housing downtown that we have affordable housing in, that we encouraged on Michigan Avenue, on Wabash, whether it's in Bronzeville, in the heart of where some of the most senior buildings are and run by the CHA, or whether it's in Hyde Park. We've been leading and doing that. So we need somebody who can represent the entire city and double down in these disenfranchised areas. I've shown that I've been able to do that. I'm going to invoke leader Hakeem Jeffries. Our diversity makes us stronger. We need somebody who truly believes that and leans into it and is strategic about how we get there. An accessible Chicago is a strong Chicago, and a strong Chicago is a safe Chicago. Punch two.
And Mayor Lightfoot.
Well, thank you all for being here, and thank you for the opportunity. I think what you've heard this afternoon is a lot of alignment on some core issues. The difference is who's actually gotten things done. In 3+ years, we have worked hard to make sure that equity and inclusion includes the disability community. Financial empowerment, eliminating the substandard minimum wage that was disgraceful and held people back, creating a career center that has served over 100 people and created real full-time job opportunities, making sure that we've empowered, I think, one of the greatest disability rights commissioners in the country. And by the way, that person is the commissioner of the Mayor's Office of People with Disabilities, been in existence, sir, for about 25+ years. We are getting it done because we believe that the city has to be one that is the most accessible in the country. concrete, tangible things done on behalf of and with and united with this community. I'm very proud of our record. There's more to be done, more that we can build on housing, accessibility to transportation. But we are headed in the right direction, and I urge you to vote for me for re-election so we continue the work that needs to be done. Thank you, and don't forget to vote. I'm not going to tell you just to vote for me. I want you to come out and vote. We've got to lift Chicago's turnout above 30%. Everybody needs to vote. Vote early. Make sure you vote by mail, whatever it takes. But do show up and do vote. Claim our power as Americans in our democracy. Vote, vote, vote. Thank you all.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, you may applause for everybody, please.